David Lee Roth,
92.3 Free FM.
Du hører på David Lee Roth. Roth Radio på begynnelsen av morgenen. Sjokkerende stødig. You are listening to David Lee Roth. Roth Radio, first thing in the morning. Shockingly consistent.
Shockingly consistent, David Lee Roth, Roth Radio. We have a very, very special guest. He's on the telephone here. He is the former 1980 U.S. hockey captain. His name is Mike Ruzioni. Mike, how are you this morning?
Good morning, David. How you doing?
Extraordinary. And it's an amazing Olympic week, isn't it?
It's exciting. These athletes have worked pretty hard to get there, and now it's the time for them to kind of showcase their skills.
Are you actually at the Olympics, Mike, or are you watching it on TV like I am?
I'm on TV, watching it on TV now. I'm actually heading over next Monday.
Okay, now we're talking to Mike because he was the captain of the 1980 U.S. hockey team. Mike, tell us what it was like, the differences between 1980 and what you might experience today when you're dealing with a hockey team like this.
Well, I think that the big difference, obviously, is the age and the fact that these players are all professional hockey players.
Okay, speak to that. What do you think that is the big issue here? Is this a big issue to you, that these professionals are competing against amateurs, or what?
Not really. They're competing, actually, against the professionals. It's all the best professionals from all the other countries. And in 1980, we were the only amateurs, and all the other teams were professionals. So it's changed drastically, but I'm not a big fan of the pros. I like the amateur players playing, the college players playing, but I think the Olympic Games of the 2000s are very different than they were in, 1980.
Well, the culture is very, very different. And also what we had back in 1980, I'm 51 years old, what we had back in 1980 was the Russians to compete with.
That's right.
And that was the pivot point of every James Bond movie. That was the pivot point of every television show, every Mission Impossible episode. Every bad guy had at least a faintly Russian accent. And that became a political issue. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, no, I agree. We're the same age, so I remember watching the same shows. At the time, I think in '80 was absolutely right. People were looking at this more than just a hockey game. It was us against the enemy. I told someone the other day, it was like if Al-Qaeda had a hockey team and we were playing them.
Oh, that's a great example. And it was absolutely that heated. Do you miss that kind of a feud? Is there a feud like that that exists today? Who's the bad guys today?
There's nobody. The people who compete in the Olympic Games are all countries that we kind of get along with. So there's really not that arch rival. I mean, in hockey, obviously, I think the arch rival now is probably Canada because, they're the best team in the world and we want to compete against them. But, as athletes, it's still an athletic event. People can look at it and say it's political. And, when we won in 1980, absolutely, it made a country feel proud. And it was like, we showed you we can beat you guys. But it still comes down to athletic competition and trying to be the best athlete in the world and compete against the best athletes. When we won in 1980, it didn't really, they didn't release the hostages and the Soviets didn't pull out of Afghanistan. But it still made people feel proud to be an American.
Well, it's also on the level of when the Iraqi soccer team was finally floated into the Olympics and the entire country, both armies, everybody in between, came to a complete standstill.
It's amazing. You think they could do that all the time, let alone just because there's an athletic competition.
Well, it transcends even music. Athletic competition, people love different kinds of music depending on what your shoes and haircut are like and what neighborhood you come from. But athletics translates into every single language and every single kind of a community. What's the difference between young athletes today and back in 1980 as far as their personal programs, the strength and weight training, supplements and that kind of thing? Has it made a big difference? Is there a big difference between the kids today and yesterday?
It's amazing, the difference.
Please share with us how so. Go ahead.
I think first of all, the training facilities that they have, the methods of training. When I played, you just played.
Start with the training facilities. Where did you guys train back in 1980? What kind of facilities did you have?
Facilities. We we played out of St. Paul, Minnesota. There was a hockey rink there, and we had maybe a room where you could lift some weights. These athletes now have training centers in Colorado Springs. They have training centers in Lake Placid. They train for months, years. You know, they have personal trainers. They have programs that they follow. You know, I work at Boston University, and I look at our hockey program, and these kids, you know, have programs that they lift all summer long. They're in there at 8 o'clock in the morning. When I was in college, you never saw the school until the school year started. So it's a whole different mindset, you know, nutrition bars, energy drinks, you know.
The way that you describe it, it sounds like a professional approach to a career in hockey.
It's a professional approach to any sport that you're playing in. You know, our skiers, our bobsledders, our luchers, these people are constantly in the gym doing something that might make them a little faster, a little stronger. You know, when you look at an example, could be our speed skaters. You know, you're talking about maybe 1/100th of a second between a gold medal and a silver medal, and they feel that it could be a training method that gets them that 1/100th of a second faster. So there is a lot of time. There's a lot of trainers that look and, you know, they profile the bodies, they videotape everything they do, and the equipment that they have, the skates are very different now to make you faster. The outfits they wear are slicker, more defined, so you can, you know, maybe be a little more wind resistant. So technology has gotten involved. It's not like let's just go out and play anymore.
Okay, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I don't know. I kind of think it's a good thing if you have that opportunity to have those type of facilities, and it's obviously a bad thing if you're, you know, an athlete that doesn't have maybe the money to have those facilities and the money to have that type of equipment. You're a little behind the eight ball.
Okay, what was the experience of being in the Olympics like for you back in 1980? Because today, like, just the opening ceremonies is something right out of Disney.
Yeah.
And you know, with the music and so forth. When you're actually in that ceremony, are you actually paying attention to what's going around you, or are you consumed with the coming up games?
Well, I think the way the pageantry is now, you probably get caught up in everything that they're doing. I mean, in 1980, we had nothing like the opening ceremonies that went on in Italy recently. So I think now the athletes get caught up in the pageantry, in the excitement. I remember in 80, it was just an honor to march in the ceremonies, and you were in your own country, and the people were chanting USA, USA, and it was awfully cold. I know that when I marched in. But now, you know, they stand there, and there's platforms and stages and you know, paparazzi, and, you know, it's really become a spectacle, which is kind of exciting. It is a pageantry in many ways, and it's a great opportunity for you to prepare for the games in terms of now when the Olympics opening ceremonies are over, you get the hoopla, you get the excitement, and now it's time to compete.
How long does it take a team today to prepare for a game? How long ago did the hockey team for the United States begin to actually prepare for their event in these Olympics here, Mike?
Now, see, that's the only difference that I don't like about the Olympics for hockey. I mean, in 1980, we trained for 6 months. We went to the Olympic Games ready to compete. The U.S. team, many of these players are going to arrive in Italy today, and they play tomorrow. So there's really not an opportunity for the team to practice, although individually they've all been playing on different teams around the National Hockey League.
Okay, but we both know that it takes how much time for a team, especially a bunch of aggressive, ambition-oriented alpha dudes. How long does it take? Roughly a year to get that to glue together?
Yeah, these players, I mean, if ideally you'd like it to be a few months, but these players are so good, it probably would take them a week to get used to playing with each other.
Gotcha. Does size matter that much these days on the hockey rink?
Not so much. It's speed. And I think, you know, obviously you like to have that big kid who can skate just as fast as the little guy. But I think the speed of the game, it's not necessarily conducive to being big and 6'3 or 6'4. If you can skate, that's what they're looking for.
Okay, now what about the enforcers? Because growing up as a kid, right, the cement head, Dave Cement Head, was every bit as important to me as the great Gretzky was. How important are these kinds of players today in this kind of hockey in the Olympics?
They don't exist. You don't need that type of player. The Olympic game is a lot faster game. The sheet of ice is a little bigger than the National Hockey League sheets of ice, so it is not a very physical game. It's more a finesse, skill level type of a game. Plus, in the Olympics, you don't see any fighting. If you get in a fight, you're thrown out of that game, plus the next game. So you don't really have that type of player on your roster. You're looking more of speed and skill.
And are you seeing that kind of a development in professional hockey in the arenas today here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, there still is the occasional fight, but very rarely. Unlike, you know, when you were talking when we were younger watching, you know, the Broad Street Bullies or the Boston Big Bad Bruins play, you'd see 7, 8, 10 fights a game. Now it really doesn't exist. I think a lot of that is the influx of the European players, a lot more skill in the National Hockey League now. And, you know, the adage they say, if you can't skate, you can't play. And they're looking for skilled players, not fighters.
High speed, low drag, it sounds like. You got to be aerodynamic. Did you realize that you were in one of the greatest moments in sports history while you were in it? Is it truly difficult to know you're on the mountain while you're on it?
You know, we had no idea. Part of it, I think, is because we weren't allowed to talk to the media, so we didn't really know what people were saying and writing. Also, we were up in Lake Placid, and it's just kind of a little cocoon, and no really understanding of what was going on around us. I mean, I think we as a team knew that people in Lake Placid were excited about what was happening, but had no clue the country was watching the way they were.
What can you tell young people who are thinking about going for the Olympics? Because it's a tremendous commitment of time and energy, and you're going to squander a little bit of your health, too. What can you tell somebody about the experience of being in the Olympics that's going to make it really attractive to somebody who's kind of on the fence about doing this?
Well, first of all, I think any time you have an opportunity to represent your country in the Olympic Games, it's a great honor. To march in the ceremonies, to put a shirt on that says USA across the front is something.
Jesus, you're not about to say patriotism, are you?
Well, it's an honor. It's something that's really special to do. And I tell young kids, if they ever get that opportunity, to pursue it to their best, because it is something special. We talk about professional athletes, and there's a lot of professional athletes out there playing a lot of different sports, but there are very few Olympians, and I think it's a very different atmosphere and a very, very different mindset when you train for 4, 8, 12 years, maybe just for that one race.
Hey, being an Olympian is for life. I can't imagine you going more than 48 hours without somebody summoning up that memory or that image. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's something I think that's pretty special for me and for my teammates. It's a thing that we'll carry with us forever, and it's a good thing to carry. It's a moment, I guess, we've realized that not only was special for us, but special for a lot of people. And you don't get those kind of moments in your life that often. I was telling someone the other day, you know, we just had a Super Bowl, and I'm a Patriots fan, and they didn't make it, so I really didn't care who won. But when it's the Olympic Games, it's a whole nation that watches, and it's a little different atmosphere.
I got to agree with you. You think the interest in the Olympics is as much now as it was back in the 80s, or is it more, or what are you seeing develop up there? I'm talking to Mike Eruzione. He's the former captain of the U.S. hockey team from 1980, the Miracle Team. What do you think? Is it as popular as ever? Is it getting more, getting less? What are you seeing?
Well, I think it's as popular as ever. I think part of it is because we have so many athletes in different sports that more people are following them. I think the one change, and we talked about it earlier, David, is probably we don't have that enemy kind of competition anymore, where people look forward to, oh yeah, the U.S. is skating against Russia tomorrow. You know, we don't have that. It's more of, hey, our American athletes are competing. Let's hope they do well, kind of a mindset.
I got you. Now, what about how do our young athletes really support themselves now, Mike? What happens with subsidizing or endorsement, or what are the rules say? I'm a little bit in the dark about this. How do our kids pay for their stuff?
Well, a lot of it is corporate America. A lot of corporations are behind sponsoring our teams. It's interesting you said that. I'm a part of a co-program with Bank of America, where it's a Keep the Change program, where you can use your debit card to help raise money for our Olympic athletes. And the money that they raise, Bank of America will donate back into the Olympic Committee, Olympic training centers, facilities. So it really is a roundabout way of many people getting involved, donating money to the Olympic Games, to our Olympic programs.
Hey, what about what's going on with general professional issues in terms of all the other sports? Are we seeing the same kind of a thing that we see in hockey? Are we seeing people of professional in other departments? Is this now a pattern that we see where pretty soon it's all going to be considered professional?
Yeah, I think in certain sports, obviously basketball is a professional sport because they have professional leagues. You know, I'm not sure there's a professional swimming league out there, so probably our swimmers are amateurs unless they get endorsement money from sponsors to, you know, wear certain labels on their clothing or whatever. But there are more sports now that have gone professional, so a lot of our athletes in the Olympic Games are professionals in sports that kind of have that opportunity for them.
Captain Mike Arruzzioni, king of the 1980 U.S. hockey team. Thanks so much for calling us up, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Take care.
Have a great Olympic week, brother.
Yeah. I will. Thank you.
You got it, man. Hey, makes me want to go play hockey, huh?
Do that?
Not just yet. You want to take a call? We got a minute
sure.
here.
See what somebody's got a couple, yeah.
Visit here. Talking to here. Number 8. See what he thinks about the Olympics here. Chad, you're on Roth Radio. Go ahead, friend.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Excellent, Chad. What's cooking?
Hey, let me ask you something. What do you feel on the professionals going over to the Olympics and getting hurt? Do you think the pros should still be paid? Even if they get hurt over there?
Well, I don't know. Go ahead and explain what's happening here, and we'll sit as the jury. Go ahead and explain exactly what's happening.
I see it as you're coming out of the pros. You're getting paid millions of dollars to play in the pros. You go play for the Olympics. You get hurt. You can't play for the pros anymore, and you're still going to get paid?
That's an interesting question. What do you think?
I don't think they should. That's why I think amateurs should be playing in the Olympics, not pros.
Well,
pros,
you know what?
Played in the pros.
I'm kind of torn between the two, okay? I understand what the pros bring to the game, but I was raised on that real close discipline that it's an amateur pursuit. The Olympics are specifically for amateurs who aren't subsidized, who don't have the endorsements, who, you know, it's the classic kid coming out of the middle of nowhere and working hard and then making his way on his own talent. On the other hand, you know, when I was asking Mike here from the hockey team, is how many people are really arch professionals? Because that's a whole different lifestyle. You know, kids who don't have to go to school, kids who don't have to deal with a lot of the issues of, you know, money and rent and food and all of those kinds of things. And when you're a professional athlete and that's all you do, now you're dealing with massage therapists and X-rays and chiropractors. Don't ask me to spell that. It adds up to a lot of cash, and I don't know that it's equal. If you have people who are lucky enough to get an endorsement or so, you know, Citicorp Bank is going to love figure skating, but they hate the weightlifters. Okay, now what do you do with the shot put guy? Well, we already got one of those on the protein jar, so he's out of luck. And it turns out a little bit uneven like that. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree.
Okay, thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. I'm gonna go pump some iron, see if I can't get in the Olympics, man.
Mornings, David Lee Roth on 92.3 Free FM.
Du hører på David Lee Roth. Roth Radio på begynnelsen av morgenen. Sjokkerende stødig. You are listening to David Lee Roth. Roth Radio, first thing in the morning. Shockingly consistent.
Okay, I told you, you heard it here first. Strategists at the Pentagon are drawing up plans for devastating bombing raids backed by a submarine-launched ballistic missile attacks against Iran's nuclear sites as a last resort. A last resort to block Tehran's efforts to develop an atomic bomb. Central Command and Strategic Command are identifying targets, assessing weapon loads, working on logistics for an operation, the Sunday Telegraph has learned. Oh, yeah. God, aren't you going to be glad that we have some air bases within spitting distance, huh? Yeah. Ooh, don't tell me somebody was actually thinking ahead there. 866-313-3733. Okay, you tell me. Obviously, something's going to have to be done about Iran. If this is a nation of individuals who become psychotic over the presentation of a cartoon, okay, then we have a serious issue here in terms of what's going on in that part of the world politically. I said it earlier at the very beginning of my broadcast career, well, 5 weeks ago. watch out. What we're actually doing in Iraq is not just trying to look for weapons of mass destruction. We never were. We're not actually looking for democracy. If it arrives, that's great, but it's secondary of importance. We've been protecting the gas station, one of which is Kuwait, the other is Arabia. You've got Yemen. You've got a whole number of other countries over there that supply us with our fuels, okay? We make a deal with the gas station. The gas station is in what we arguably would call a rough neighborhood. And part of the deal is that we protect the gas station. I don't even think that that was the whole agenda. I'm absolutely convinced that one of the maneuvers that we made here was specifically so that we could plant some air bases without having to worry about flyover zones that are within spinning distance of the cases who are over in Iran right now. I'm wondering what you think about it. 866-313-3733. What do you think, Animal? Is this something that's going to happen soon, or you watching this on the television?
Yeah, I'll be checking a little bit out of it. You know, it got me kind of spooked a little bit, but, you know, we just got to do what we got to do, man. So,
what do you think, B. Young? You got an idea on this, Vint?
I think it's going to be a while before anything really happens. They're going to keep warning him and warning him over and over. From the UN will do sanctions and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so the UN is going to get involved and that you were going to see all the news updates and whatever. But clearly somebody behind the scenes is getting ready for big problems, okay? I don't know. Okay, here's the question. Is war a complete disintegration of everything that is reasonable? Is war a complete falling apart of reason? Is war a complete illogical digression from man's higher nature? Or do you think war is just an accelerated form of negotiation? Because it isn't my family. Go ahead, put on the first caller here, Hutch. Swing on it. 866-313-3733. Who's there?
Hello?
Go ahead, my friend. You're on. Hit it.
Hey, David Lee Ruff. It's Michael Cohen. How you doing, buddy?
Go ahead, Mike.
Anyway, man, so I was over in Iraq. I was in the 15th Infantry. And basically, they needed some guys over there to kind of entertain the troops because it got very frustrating. And I happened to be a rock star named Stevie Blue. Not a joke. However, what was happening over there is you had girls they would bring in. Sometimes they would try to maneuver situations. But these girls were actually working for the bad guy.
Oh, where'd he go?
What was that? I think he was just kidnapped by aliens. No, that was another interview. Go ahead, pick the next one up there, Hutch. I think he was making an effort at comedy, but he's having trouble spelling effort.
Josh in Philly.
Josh, you're on. Go ahead, friend. What do you think?
Hey, Dave. I think they're not planning it right now. They've been planning it. If you read about, there was a project in the early 90s called the Project for a New American Century, which was a think tank, where they basically laid out a plan for American dominance in the next century. If you look at who's on that think tank, it's a who's who of the Bush administration.
Okay, so what is your theory? Go ahead.
What is my theory?
Yeah.
I think that really this whole thing about democracy, oil, I think they're trying to get like an area where they can establish control to control the oil. Yeah, basically, because oil has become so much of a dominating subject that, you know, look at China. China is right now becoming a major superpower, and they're lacking oil. There is a lack of oil in China.
So what do you think? Are we going to go to war with them over the Mideast? We're going to fight over who gets the Mideast?
I think this won't be a war with Iran. I think this would end up being a war with China, and I don't think it's really going to get that far because there's too many interests between China and America right now to actually go that far. Because generally, from what I understand, China gets a lot of their oil from Iran.
And we get all of our stereos from China.
Exactly. So, I mean, just look at the devastation that would cause. Oh. There's not going to be an invasion of that country. No way.
It doesn't sound like it to me. You think we belong in Iraq?
I think that right now it's been too far gone and dragged out. I think that personally we should have gone in, eliminated Saddam. Job's over, go home. You know something? I go to work, you know, and I leave when the job's done. End of story.
So you think the best thing was that we just kicked the hive over there and let them sort it out, but nevertheless you feel that that was a proper thing for us to go and do?
I really think that he was a lunatic, and I think he probably should have been taken out. But I think that our over-idealism of spreading democracy really is what did us in this point, because really I don't think the Iraqis really wanted us there to begin with. The Afghanistan has been pretty much is assessed. The Afghanis were indeed oppressed. They felt they were oppressed, and we were able to actually move in and get them on our side. Most of the fighting in Afghanistan was done by the rebel soldiers, not really by American soldiers, done by special forces that went in and got the rebels on our side.
Okay, well, I don't think it was about democracy either. You think it was just about stabilizing the gas station?
I really think that there's been more harm than good, really, in stabilizing the gas station. I really think that we've really thrown that area up into craziness right now.
So what you're saying is what we should have just kicked back and let it all just sort of be?
Yeah, you know, I really think so. And if Saddam really did make a move and said, you know, well, listen, I'm going to come out and, you know, blow out the weapons of mass destruction, that's fine. We should have gone in then. I think we were really too preemptive. I think we were built too presumptuous on the idea that there are war weapons there. It would have worked out great for the Bush administration. There were weapons there, but it just didn't work out like that. I think that this whole thing was an idea of trying to get in there, take control of oil.
I think we got it. Thanks for calling. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth, 866-313-3733, number 13. Hutch, bang that in there. You're talking to David Lee. Go ahead, friend. You're on.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Okay, Lewis, what's up?
I just want to go back to what you mentioned earlier about people just going nuts over a cartoon.
Please.
I don't think it's that they're going nuts over a cartoon. It's basically what the cartoon represented. They took a religious figure of theirs and drew a picture of him with a bomb on top of his head, which to them is saying, okay, you know, everyone that's involved with that religion is crazy and they're ready to bomb everyone. I think that in this country, the most popular religion, of course, is Christianity. If someone drew a picture of Jesus touching little children, people may not they may not attach bombs to themselves. They may not go to that extreme, but they would be very upset.
Okay, and you're saying that if somebody drew a picture of Jesus doing what?
Touching little children.
Okay, stop right there. Stop right there. What you're doing is you're comparing apples to oranges here, my friend. Somebody made a political illustration, okay? People do that with Jesus all the time. They do it with Buddha all the time. They do it with the president. They do it with the local rabbi. That's the basis of free speech, okay? That somebody can point to the emperor and say the emperor's wearing no clothes. Whether or not the emperor is wearing no clothes is beside the point. That we allow the capacity to do that. Saying that somebody made a political commentary about a picture of somebody with a bomb on his head is very different than a religious figure child molesting. Agree or disagree?
I disagree.
Okay, well then you're psychotic. But stay here because we don't get the well ones at Roth Radio. Let me continue. If you have street riots, if you flood into the streets in massive demonstrations over a simple illustration, what happens to the free speech issue then? Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, I agree with we have free speech, but what I'm trying to tell you is that you can't fault these people for being upset. I mean, they also have the right to be upset about something like that, just like what I'm saying that someone else, if you were to do that with Jesus or any other religious figure, someone who's very into their religion is going to be very upset by that.
Nevertheless, there's no destruction of property. There's very few instances when people are hurt. And from what I understand, that's exactly what transpired from this one illustration. I discussed the illustration where there was the wounded soldier with his arms and legs bandaged and the fellow with the clipboard. And a lot of people got upset about that. But I don't know that there was destruction of property or actual rushing into the streets on behalf of that. My concern is, do you start to pull in the sails? You draw in your ropes in order to cater to people who make so much noise? Do you then not have those cartoonists? Is that your approach?
No, I wouldn't do that, but I'm just saying that we need to have understanding that the problem, the reason why all this stuff is going on is because we have no understanding of the other side. You understand? We got to look towards the other side and see the other side's point of view to be able to understand them. Not everyone is going to react to something the same way that another country does. Our country, we don't do that, but in their country, they do. We have to look at that and be aware of that and respect that.
Okay, you know, now in the country of Denmark, do they not allow free speech to the extent that somebody can do a caricature or an illustration of that nature?
That I'm not aware of. I don't know anything about that.
Okay, well, I'll refresh your memory. It is okay, all right?
Okay.
You have that capacity. That's why those newspapers do what they do. That part of the world is famous for its version of democracy, its version of free speech, its version of the individual rights, whatever. The individuals who actually were responsible for that illustration, I understand, resigned on the heels of the demonstrations, and all that was guaranteed was the owner of the newspaper saying, resign so I don't have to fire you and seem weak. That's okay? That all strikes you as okay in honor of being sensitive to somebody else's needs?
Not at all.
Because it sounds to me like a bitter end for everybody. That if you're going to start catering to people because they make noise when they're upset about a cartoon, where does that lead to? Do you have any idea at all?
My point is understanding. I'm not saying that you have to just succumb to whatever whatever they're upset about. Like you can't do caricatures or whatever the case is. I'm just saying that we have to understand it. Understand why. I mean, these people take their religion very seriously, and I think that we should respect that. We shouldn't.
I wonder where the religion leaves off and the nationalism picks up. I wonder where the religion leaves off and the spirit of adventure picks up. I wonder where the religion leaves off and a lot of crazy, colorful publicity and, hey, I get to use an automatic weapon, huh? I wonder where that picks up, because the two seem to be dovetailing alarmingly frequently.
David Lee Roth, the 92.3 Free FM.
David Lee Roth へようこそ。勝利の笑いの禅と芸術。 Welcome to David Lee Roth, Zen and the Art of Laughing Last.
David Lee Roth here, reading from the press, London's Telegraph's strategists at the Pentagon are drawing up plans for devastating bombing raids backed by a submarine-launched ballistic missile. Attacks against Iran's nuclear sites as a last resort to block Tehran's efforts to deliver an atomic bomb. Central Command and Strategic Command are identifying targets, assessing weapon loads, working on logistics for an operation. The Sunday Telegraph has learned. 866-313-3733. Go up for number 13 the first time over there. We're talking about all kinds
Richie.
Of issues here. Go ahead, my friend. You're on. Go ahead, friend. You're up.
Sorry, Rich.
Yeah, I would like to talk about that cartoon a little bit. You know,
go ahead. It's all connected. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're accusing us of being not understanding of them. How understanding of they of other people? Like when the Taliban destroyed those 1,000-year-old Buddhas. They can never be replaced again.
Well, the idea behind fundamentalism is that they're right and everybody else is wrong. And once you've decided that, then anything applies, whether that's war or whether that's any kind of what they consider advanced negotiation, okay? Perhaps the question also that we might share with each other is, do you think that war is a disintegration of all the human values, or is it just another accelerated form of negotiation? What do you think?
I think it's just another way of getting your point across, you know what I'm saying?
Like Tony Soprano says, some people, you got to get their attention.
You got to smack them in the face.
Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. David Lee Roth calling New York, Philly, Dallas, worldwide, davidleeroth.com. We're getting emails from everywhere. Feel free to dial us in here. Go on up for track 10 there, Hutch. That looks like a good call. David Lee, go
That's
ahead. From
Jim.
Jim, you're in.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, you're talking about the Iranians and the Mullahs and the nuclear weapon program they have. One thing, I only tuned in recently, but one thing, I'm wondering if you are taking into account the fact that the Israelis...
account what? Say again?
The Israelis.
Okay, what about it? Go ahead.
They have a history of taking out dangers to them. For example, Iraq, I think it was in 1978 thereabouts that they took out their reactor.
Certainly. I know that. I'm aware of it. So what is your theory?
Well... I don't think we're going to do it. I think the Israelis are going to do it. We just sold them a bunch of bunker buster bombs. They certainly have the need to do it. And they've, you know, if you judge history by the actions of the past, if they perceive a danger to themselves, I have no doubt that they will knock them out.
Okay.
As for American going after the nuclear program in Iran, that's going to be a tough sell. That really is going to be a tough sell. You don't have the support in this country. Granted, Bush is a second-term president, but I think there would be uproar if we attack them without them attacking us. You have to remember, America is a very pacifistic country by nature. If you look back to the 40s, late 30s and early 40s, there was an America First movie that strongly was against this country going to war in Europe and the Pacific. That only changed after America attacked Pearl Harbor. So unless they attack us or do something with that nuclear weapon, I don't think we're going in.
Okay, so you think this is an old political move. It's called the dog always bites the whip and never looks at the hand that holds it. You think that we're going to supply the Israelis, or that we currently are supplying the Israelis with armament and ordnance, and that the Israelis are going to be the whip, and that hopefully the Iranians are never going to look at the hand that's holding it. Agreed?
Agreed, but whatever happens, we're going to get blamed. You know, if the Israelis do it, we're going to get blamed. You have to accept that. We've already provided the bunker buster bombs. Now, these are bombs that can drop from great heights, and they go 50, 100 feet underground before exploding. The Iranians are smart. They learned from the problem the Iraqis had. When the Iraqi reactor was bombed, it was one site out in the open. The Israelis got to it, 1, 2, 3, everything's over. What the Iranians do is they spread everything out and they buried it. So instead of having one site to target, you have 50 sites to target. That makes it a lot harder.
Okay, and are you suggesting that we should kick back and sort of let things be, or should we intervene? What's your solution here today?
Long term, I think we need to intervene. You're dealing with the leader of Iran. I don't remember his name. He's a lunatic. He's talking about how Israel should be wiped off the map, and basically he's talking about the nuclear annihilation of the country. Israel is a small country. You drop one bomb on that, it's pretty much gone. So if we don't take care of it, the Israelis will. They have, a couple hundred nuclear weapons?
You have a very interesting point. Thanks for giving us a call here. Roth Radio. Yeah, he's talking about a lot of issues that, you know, when you want peace, you prepare for war, huh? Peace is our profession. I remember that that bumper sticker in the 60s here. DavidLeeRoth.com. We're getting emails from all over the world on this one here. Also, don't forget, House tomorrow, it's going to be interesting to get Henry's view on this. I got Henry Rollins is going to be dropping in the studio tomorrow. I'll find out exactly what time, but it's going to be interesting to see what Henry thinks about our scenario here. Hey, Dallas, Texas. Roll out old Texas skies. Jeff, you're on Roth Radio. You're talking to David Lee. Go ahead. Go ahead, friend.
Oh, I want to talk about the Iran situation.
Please.
Well, I think that I'm going to disagree with that guy. I think the reason that we're starting to leak out, that we're coming up with contingency plans, if you will, is also to kind of keep Israel from attacking Iran. I think that's going to be a bigger mess. I also think that we are going to give diplomacy its full chance. There's, some things coming up in the next couple of weeks that I think we're keeping our eye on.
What are coming up in the next few weeks? Share that with us.
Well, on February 20th, they rescheduled the meeting with Russia to hold uranium enrichment, and I think everybody's kind of crossing their fingers that that'll be the diplomatic solution out of this crisis. I also think we're keeping a strong eye on what's going on with Hamas, becoming, the Palestinian, presidency.
Yeah, hell's a popping there. Are you a believer in the state of Israel?
I am very much so a believer and supporter in the state of Israel. And I am all for, if diplomacy fails here, going into Iran. I think, though, that it's going to be a lot different than going into Iraq. For one thing, I think that was kind of handled like a bull in a China store. So therefore, even the more reason to let diplomacy run its course and to get a world coalition as opposed to just us going in with a few nations.
Sure, sounds like there's a world coalition forming. Sounds like it's much more popular than the Iraqi conflict, agreed?
Most definitely. I mean, you're dealing with somebody who is blatantly saying, calling for the destruction of Israel, and is blatantly, thumbing their nose at the International Atomic Agency.
Well, you can't really talk about Israel without thumbing your nose at half of New York, half of Pittsburgh, half of Philly, and two-thirds of Southern California. Everybody's got relatives that connect in there. It's not like you can attack Puerto Rico and not get a lot of screaming down where I live. It's very closely connected. That's family. It goes beyond politics there. And you have to consider that as well. What do you think? Is there going to be a meltdown anytime soon?
I'd say probably around fall, if there's not a diplomatic breakthrough. I think, something else to consider, though, is it's not just going to be air raids and a submarine launch. I mean, you're dealing with a nation that hasn't been restricted by North and South no-fly zone for 11 years. You're dealing with a military that's not going to surrender on the spot. We're going to have to send in ground troops, and you're going to be dealing with, I'm sure there's going to be insurgents from Syria coming in. I mean, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to just complicate things. And I think that's all the more reason why we are hoping and keeping our fingers crossed for a diplomatic solution. But it's also kind of like in The Godfather when they're talking about making an offer you can't refuse. You know, you're going to hold a gun to your head and say either your brains or your signature is going to go on this piece of paper.
And at this point in time, would you be interested in doubling the pay for all of our guys and gals in uniform?
Almost definitely.
Thanks for calling. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. I've been pounding this for my whole Broadway career. You got to double the pay. You got to start taking care of these people's families. You got to start taking care of their kids. You got to start taking care of our wounded, because there's always a fresh war right around the corner here. I think we got a Marine up here. Talk to Rich on Chapter 10 there, Hodge. Go ahead. Rich, David Lee, you're in. Hit it.
Dave, excellent show, man. You can talk about this all day long.
Go ahead.
That last caller was absolutely right, but I got to tell you, here's my take. My coworker, his brother-in-law is he's one step below the one-star general.
Okay.
Okay. He's in the Marines. Here's his frustration. He spent 6 weeks just recently in the Pentagon. Here's his frustration. We've got 150,000 troops over there in Iraq. We need 300 to get the job done. The problem here is the American people are now, they want troops home. So the government is saying, all right, look, so we're going to start sending people home. We're going to start sending troops home very soon, very soon. The next thing you know, Iran pops up. Now it's an Iran thing. Okay, nuclear, they're starting with their reactors again. Okay, Rumsfeld, a couple of weeks ago. Well, you know, it's not out of our realm of thought that there'll be military action in Iran. So here we go. Here we go again.
Oh, I don't think it's again. I think that was planned early on. That's just chess play. They thought 15 moves ahead. I don't think it was ever about spreading democracy. I don't think it was ever really about weapons of mass destruction. Might have been. I think it's about protecting the fuel supply and placing enough strategic air bases within spitting distance of Iran that we don't have to worry about flyover zones, okay? Because Iran impacts everybody. Iraq, you never know. You know, it's a contained environment, perhaps. But what happens with Iran when they start talking about nuclear, that happens in your own backyard. You agree or disagree?
Oh, I so agree. And to do what we need to do in Iraq, okay, which is totally which I feel that Afghanistan was a whole nother ballgame. We didn't need to be in Iraq. You need 300,000 troops. What's happening there is that if you're securing an area, if you're securing a 20-mile area from, let's say, Manhattan, you need to. What we're doing now, and this comes from the horse's mouth, what we're doing now is we're driving up the center of the road and we're trying to secure, let's say, a 20-mile radius, you know, straight up. And what's happening is car bombs are coming from the sides. We're like sitting ducks out there. We don't have enough men to secure what's actually happening. So that's why you're hearing these roadside bombs. And the frustration of the level of these officers is huge, and average public doesn't hear what's going on there.
I'd like to hear from some of those officers. If any of you are listening, you don't have to identify yourself by name, but give us a call here, 866-313-3733. Thanks for giving us a call. We'll be back right after this war.
David Lee Roth, mornings,